Hello, everyone. It's a great pleasure for me to introduce you to Dr. Michael Palmer. Michael is a physician who specialized in microbiology, infectious diseases, and also immunology and molecular biology. He holds a professorship in biochemistry at the University of Waterloo, and he has also written textbooks on pharmacology, and today he's going to talk to you about something that has hardly ever been mentioned during this whole narrative, and that is about the pharmacokinetics and toxicity of mRNA vaccines. Michael, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Sucharit. Okay, so we will start on a theme that Mike Geegan already brought up to us, right? Pharmacokinetics deals with the question, what happens to a drug or to a vaccine in this case once the drug has been applied to the body, right? Where does it end up? How fast does it get there? How is it ultimately eliminated? And toxicity, I don't think, needs explanation. Now, Mike already brought up to us that proper trials on this question really haven't been carried out. But there are some limited animal data that Pfizer submitted to the Japanese authorities and which were published by those authorities. Limited as they are, these data give some useful insight, and they give rise to grave concern. In particular, I'm going to point out to you that based on these data alone, we actually had to expect grave harm of the kind that Mike already brought up to us, and that also Sucharit has been warning the public about since early on after the vaccination started. Okay, can I have the next slide, please? Very good. So this is just by way of an overview and repetition, right? You know that the mRNA vaccines consist of a messenger RNA, which is initially encased with a mixture of lipids. These are fat-like molecules, and the different constituents in this lipid mixture serve various specific tasks in the uptake of the vaccine into our body cells and into the release of the mRNA into the interior of the cell. The mRNA, after this release, can then be turned into protein. This is taken care of by the ribosomes, the little protein factories of the cell. And the spike protein is then transported to the cell surface. Okay, at the cell surface, it becomes visible to antibodies, and it also contributes to the stimulation of B cells. These are a type of immune cell that ultimately will end up producing more antibodies to the spike protein. What also can happen is that a fragment of the spike protein is cleaved off and released into the bloodstream. And as Mike already mentioned, this fragment can activate blood clotting. Okay, we will see some data later on that measure this portion, this fraction of the released spike protein fragment. Now, as with any other protein that is made by a cell, a sample of these protein molecules undergoes fragmentation, and the fragments are then taken to the cell surface where they are exposed to the immune system in connection with specific carrier molecules, right? So T cells, another type of immune cell, will latch onto those exposed fragments, and if they recognize those as foreign, then they will mount a cytotoxic response, right? T killer cells will be formed that will attack the cell producing this fragment. Okay, so this kind of fairly radical approach of killing off cells that express viral proteins is an essential part of immune defense against viral infection. Okay, let me just reduce the volume a little bit here. Okay, now can I have the next slide after this one? Okay, now one essential function of the lipid coating surrounding the messenger RNA is the entry into host cells. Now, how is this accomplished? Okay, we need a little bit of background in order to understand this. the lipids, right, fat-like molecules, as you know, they are not water-soluble, so there is a special mechanism for transporting them throughout the body, and this is to package them into lipoproteins. We have a core of these fat-like molecules inside the particles, and this is surrounded, encased, stabilized by so-called apolipoproteins. Now, these apolipoproteins can actually detach from these lipoprotein particles and can bind to those vaccine particles, nanoparticles. Okay, so this means that these vaccine particles can now bind to the cell surface in much the same manner as the proper lipoproteins do. Can I have the next slide, please? So here we see this, right? The normally the mechanism that exists on these cells, it involves a receptor that recognizes specific apolipoproteins, and this leads to the ingestion of the lipoprotein particle. It will then ultimately be broken down inside a cell and the fat will be utilized. Now, a vaccine nanoparticle which has acquired the corona of apolipoprotein can be ingested in the very same way. Okay, and another effect this has is shown on the next slide. I can have that, please. Thank you. The lipoprotein particles are rather big, right? They're rather large. And the capillary barriers, the endothelial cell layer that surrounds our blood vessels, particularly capillaries, these are the smallest blood vessels across which substrate exchange occurs. They will let through only small molecules freely, such as, for example, blood sugar. Blood sugar can diffuse freely across capillary barriers, but these lipoprotein particles are too big, so they are actually taken up actively by these receptor-dependent mechanisms into these endothelial cells, and they can then be released on the other side. And we have to expect that the same can happen with these vaccine nanoparticles after they have acquired this apolipoprotein corona. Okay, so this may be a mechanism by which the vaccine, after having entered the bloodstream, which actually it shouldn't do, but it does, as we'll see later, after having entered the bloodstream, can be released to the tissue beyond the bloodstream and can reach other cell types. And that may be very important for toxicity also. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so I already mentioned that we do have a limited study on vaccine pharmacokinetics, which was carried out on rats. Now, one important limitation of the study is that this model vaccine, which was used here, contained a different messenger RNA, which encoded not the spike protein, which, as Mike pointed out, is toxic, but a presumably inert protein, luciferase. This is the very protein, it's a protein isolated from fireflies, and this is the very protein that enables those fireflies to glow in the dark. And if this protein is expressed in rat cells or in human cells, it will also cause these cells to be luminescent. So we can observe the light output of such cells or of such experimental animals and then get an idea how strongly the mRNA in question is expressed. So this was a way of tracking where the gene went, but it wasn't really widely exploited, as you will see. Then cholesterol, which is contained in the lipo-nanoparticles, is one composite component of the lipid mixture, was labeled with radioactivity, and this enabled convenient tracking of the lipid component. Now, the distribution of the lipid was measured the most extensively, and it was measured after different time points and at different organs. So can I have the next slide, please? Right, so the entire vaccine was injected into the muscle tissue, and the expectation might have been that indeed the vaccine would actually remain in the muscle, but this was not the case. Quite a bit of the vaccine appeared in the bloodstream, and it did so fairly rapidly. Right, the maximal level inside the bloodstream was observed after 2 hours, but even after only 15 minutes, one quarter of an hour, we observed about half that level already in the bloodstream. So that's very high, and it's very concerning, because we must then expect, obviously, that the mRNA, the vaccine and the mRNA, will be taken up by those endothelial cells, which I mentioned, and these will make the spike protein, and this will have deleterious effects on blood clotting. It will tend to set off blood clotting in a various and variety of ways that Sue Charrette is going to tell us more about in his talk later on. And this is indeed something that he and others warned about very early on, right? They could see this coming, and it has come to pass. Now, what we also see is that the vaccine very strongly accumulates in the liver and in the spleen. That is not so surprising, because both of these organs have a prominent role in clearing the bloodstream of particles that really shouldn't be swimming around there. And the liver in particular also has a prominent role in lipoprotein turnover. So we have at least two plausible pathways for the liver to accumulate this stuff. Now, of great concern is that we see high levels in the ovaries and in the adrenal glands also. But what we notice here is that that accumulation occurs with some delay, right? At 4 hours, there isn't much going on here, whereas the liver and the spleen already have accumulated quite a bit of the stuff. Whereas the, and they stagnate after 8 hours, whereas these two glands, which use cholesterol for making their specific steroid hormones, continue accumulating the material even after 48 hours. So this takes us to another question. Next slide, please. Okay. Do these organs, right, the ovaries and the adrenal glands, accumulate the vaccine directly, which is perfectly possible? In this case, they should also be accumulating the messenger RNA. Or do they accumulate it after it has initially been processed by the liver, right? If that happens, if the liver takes up the vaccine, most likely the radioactively labeled cholesterol would become separated from the messenger RNA. It would be repackaged into lipoprotein particles, which would then be released from the liver and taken up by those organs. So that's an important question, and it was simply not studied. This would be an easy experiment to do, right? We could have measured, we could have traced the messenger RNA directly, could have, for example, also independently been labeled with radioactivity, and we could have just measured it. It has not been done, or at least it was not reported. Next slide, please. Now, the lipid mixture that is contained in these lipid nanoparticles contains two synthetic lipids that have never really been approved for use in humans. But now it is just all waved through without any proper studies. Okay, there is no, as Mike already pointed out, there is no toxicity studies, no pharmacokinetic studies on this stuff. But what we do see here is, right, that in the liver, that was the only organ that was properly measured, the lipid accumulates and it just stays even after 2 weeks, right? The last data point for the liver, the red curve, the cationic lipid after 2 weeks is still at very high levels. So it's a very slow turnover. Next slide, please. And I'm not going to go into details here, but the chemists among us, or biochemists among us, will recognize that the slow turnover is right built into the structure. You can see details about this explained in the written version of this presentation, so we can leave it at that and go on to the next slide. But the key point here is that we must expect long-term accumulation in the body. And this becomes important in the context of these repeat vaccinations, right? We are hearing more and more that everybody of us will have to get a booster shot for the latest variant that has been announced and so on and so forth. So if we comply, we will have to get booster shots every couple of months. And we have to expect that these cationic lipids may accumulate over time in the liver and also in other tissues, for example, the ovaries. We really cannot rule this out. Okay, I think I will skip this one here, but let's go to the next one. It takes too much time to explain. Okay, now, right with the liver, right? The liver actually was shown to express luciferase, right? So the mRNA functioned in the liver and also in the spleen. The question is, does this also apply to the ovaries and to the adrenal glands and to other organs or not? It would have been easy enough to test this, but it was not done. Okay, and the regulatory bodies, the FDA, the EMA, and so on, they all should have insisted on being shown such studies before even contemplating the emergency use authorization, and they did not do it. This shows very clearly regulatory capture. These bodies are not independent and they don't protect your health. Next slide, please. Okay, so I already mentioned that these animal data alone would have should have raised the alarm in terms of risk of clotting. The same goes, right, risk, they should have raised the alarm of organ toxicity, right? All the organs that were shown to accumulate the radio label, they should have been tested, they should have been monitored, the organ function should have been monitored during the so-called clinical trials. None of this was done. The clinical trials were a complete and utter farce in terms of monitoring toxicity. Next slide, please. Okay, now one prediction was that the rapid uptake of the vaccine into the bloodstream should cause expression of the spike protein in the circulation, and then downstream of that, the release of soluble spike protein fragment into the plasma. That was indeed observed. But what we also see is, right, we see on the left-hand side of this plot, we see high data points, right? So this is the expression of the level of the spike protein fragment in the bloodstream after the first injection. The right-hand side is after the second injection. What we see here is low levels. Now, that's not good news. It's probably bad news because it suggests that antibodies have now been formed in quantity against those fragments, and they will neutralize, they will bind to this fragment and prevent it from being measured. But if that's the case, we must also expect these antibodies to bind to the cells that produce the spike protein, and this will set off the complement cascade, as Sutrit will explain later on. But if we see on the next slide, right, what you see here is, you see all of these little holes on the cell surface. This is the complement system activated by antibodies bound to the cell surface, shooting up the joint. The complement system activated by antibodies is perfectly able to destroy, utterly destroy a cell. Okay, so this is a risk implied by the findings in the previous slide. Next one. Next slide, please. Here I'm simply going to make the point that cationic lipids are cytotoxic, and for the sake of time, I will leave it at that statement. These are data from another cationic lipid, not from the Pfizer study, but cationic lipids in general are toxic. Next slide, please. And that indeed they are toxic is clear also from animal experiments, right? Note that these experiments were carried out with the luciferase, which is presumably inert. So the observed toxicity to the various organs that you can see here is mostly due to the cationic lipids. And if we take this together, right, this strong toxicity which we observe here, together with the potential for cumulative toxicity after repeated injections, then we are dealing with a real poisoning here. Next slide, please. Okay, so the Pfizer data contain only very little information on reproductive toxicity in animals, but there are, from those limited data, clear indications of damage to the embryos at a very early stage, and there's also potentially a risk, also suggested by those data, for transfer of the toxin through the placenta. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, what's also in both the European and the American databases for adverse events are a few cases of newborns who died with clinical manifestations similar to those observed in some adults, bleeding after their mothers had been vaccinated, right? So the breastfeeding, the breast milk appears to contain either the vaccine itself or the expressed spike protein, which is responsible for much of the toxicity. None of this was studied properly in animal models. Okay, next slide. Okay, so this takes me to the end, right? So it is clear that these animal data presaged practically all of the side effects, all of the major side effects that we are seeing now. Okay, the on top of that suggests prey farm to female fertility and to breastfed infants. And they really raise the possibility of cumulative toxicity after multiple injections. Okay? None of this you will find discussed in the published medical literature. Okay, thank you.